II, Georgia in the latter part of the Revolution. As you read, look for Georgia's role in the American Revolution, term siege. While Georgians had been busy fighting each other and making unsuccessful raids into Florida, the American Patriot forces in the North had suffered several defeats and won very few victories. But in October 1777, the Americans won the Battle of Saratoga in New York. This victory was good for the morale of the Patriots. It also resulted in the Americans gaining a major ally in their fight, France. In February 1778, France and the United States signed a military alliance. French money and troops and the French Navy would now be helping the Americans. This changed the war in many ways. One was that British leaders decided to change their strategy. They chose to send professional British troops to the South to recapture Georgia and South Carolina. In those colonies, the British thought that with troops there to protect them, many Loyalists would return to the British fold and fight with the King's soldiers. They also hoped to gain Indian allies. Georgia did not know it in the spring and summer of 1778, but by the end of the year, Georgia would be greatly changed. Another invasion of Florida. In the meantime, Georgia leaders continued to plan yet another expedition to Florida, even though Southern Continental Commander General Howe did not support the idea. However, he reluctantly agreed to go along. In April, Continentals under Howe, Georgia Militia under Governor John Houston, South Carolina Militia under Colonel Andrew Williamson, and Naval Forces under Commodore Oliver Bowen, all set out. Once again, disagreement over who was in command became an issue. When the expedition reached Florida, the Florida Rangers retreated. Howe decided that forcing their retreat from the border was enough of an accomplishment, and he took his Continental troops back toward Savannah. The militia wanted to go further into Florida, but decided that they could not be successful on their own. They too returned to Georgia. All three attempted invasions of Florida in 1776, 1777, and 1778 did not succeed for several reasons. One reason was that the troops became sick and exhausted in the heat and humidity of the Georgia summers. But the major problem that led to these failures was the fact that the commanders of the Georgia militia and the Continental troops disagreed over who was in charge. They refused to cooperate with each other. The commander of Georgia's naval forces would not answer to either of the commanders. This inability to work together doomed them to failure. The fall of Savannah, Sunbury, and Augusta. During the summer of 1778, the British were preparing for their own invasion of the South. The new British commander-in-chief in America, Sir Henry Clinton, chose Savannah as the first target. The commander of the expedition was Lieutenant Colonel Archibald Campbell, who was joined in the effort by the British commander in Florida, General Augustine Prevost. The first two expeditions Prevost sent to Georgia, one by land and one by sea, arrived before Campbell and his troops, who were sailing down from New York. The naval expedition arrived at the port of Sunbury and demanded the surrender of Fort Morris. Patriot Colonel John McIntosh sent back the message, "Come and take it." General Prevost decided instead to return to Florida. The other troops from Florida arrived after the first group had left. They burned the Midway Meeting House and a few other buildings, and then returned to Florida. Campbell's fleet arrived on December 23, 1778. A Loyalist local slave guided the troops from their landing place at Bruton Hill. Campbell's forces entered Savannah with no real opposition. The British captured several hundred American patriots. Others were either killed or drowned trying to get away. According to Campbell, only 7 British troops were killed. The American Continental Forces under General Robert Hoe had to retreat quickly back to South Carolina. The Georgia Patriot government fled. In January 1779, the British offered a full pardon to all patriots who would take an oath of allegiance to the king. In January 1779, British General Prevost again led his forces into Georgia, this time capturing Fort Morris at Sunbury. He then took over command in Savannah. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Colonel Campbell left with his troops to capture Augusta, establishing outposts manned by soldiers along the way. He wanted to be the first British commander to remove a star and stripe from the American flag by returning Georgia to the king. With Georgians gathering at the Burke County Jail to oppose the British, General Prevost sent Thomas Brown and his Florida Rangers to rescue the Loyalists there and take the fort. But Brown was driven back by the Americans, one of whom was Lieutenant Colonel William Few, later a signer of the U.S. Constitution. The Burke County Patriots then joined with Colonel Samuel Elbert's army to try to stop Campbell, but they had to keep retreating. Campbell marched into Augusta on January 31st to the joy of the Loyalists in the area. Campbell quickly sent soldiers into the backcountry to find more Loyalists and encourage patriots to take the oath. Hundreds swore loyalty and agreed to be in militia units for the British. But Campbell suspected that many were not truly loyal. He believed many would desert the British if they could. He also realized that the Indians did not turn out to help the British. His soldiers had hoped to meet up with Colonel James Boyd and his North Carolina Loyalist. Instead, Boyd got into a skirmish at Carr's Fort in Wilkes County. Campbell did not stay in Augusta for long. In February, Patriot General Andrew Williamson and his South Carolina militia were camped on the South Carolina side of the river. They were joined by North Carolina Patriots under General John Ashe. Campbell decided to leave Augusta on February 14th and headed back towards Savannah. By February 20th, Campbell was camped with his troops at Hudson's Ferry on the Savannah River, over 20 miles above Ebenezer. There he turned command over to Lieutenant Colonel James Mark Prevost, brother of the general in Savannah. On March 11th, Campbell sailed away. When surprised Loyalists in Augusta realized they had been left exposed to the fury of the rebels, they were angry and terrified. Williamson, however, treated them humanely. The battles at Kettle and Briar Creeks. On February 14, 1779, as Campbell marched away from Augusta, a major battle was taking place in the backcountry of Wilkes County. Carolina Loyalist Colonel James Boyd and his men had camped near Kettle Creek on February 13th. They had been through a February 11th skirmish crossing the Savannah River from South Carolina. Boyd planned to leave the next morning for Augusta. There he hoped to join Campbell, not knowing that Campbell was leaving. The next day, however, Patriot militia led by Andrew Pickens, John Dooley, and Elijah Clark surprised the camp. Andrew Pickens and his men attacked Boyd's camp head-on. Elijah Clark and John Dooley went around back and had to cross the creek to attack the left and right rear. Even though Pickens' men fired early and alerted the Loyalist guards, the Patriots defeated the Loyalists. Boyd and many of his followers were killed, and many others were captured. Out of over 600 Loyalists, only 250 managed to escape and eventually join Campbell's forces. The Battle of Kettle Creek was minor when compared to those fought in other parts of the country. It was, however, important to Georgia. The militia was able to take badly needed weapons and horses from the Loyalist soldiers, and the spirits of the Georgia militia were lifted by their victory. The victory at the Battle of Kettle Creek also ensured that the backcountry remained in Patriot control, although Loyalist and Patriot killings continued. A year later, a Loyalist murdered John Dooley in his home. Dooley, Clark, and Pickens are all honored with county names. One of the Americans wounded that day at Kettle Creek was Austin Dabney, a mulatto slave who was serving under Elijah Clark as a substitute for his owner. A white fellow soldier, Giles Harris, took Dabney to his home and helped him recover. After the war, the legislature granted Dabney his freedom, citing a bravery and fortitude which would have honored a free man. The act noted that he had not gone to British lines as other slaves had done. It allocated money to compensate the estate of his former owner, Richard Aycock. The legislature granted him 50 acres of land. Dabney worked for the Harris family for the rest of his life. He also helped pay for the education of Harris's son at Franklin College. In 1789, the federal government granted him a pension for his disability. Unfortunately for the Patriots, the victory at Kettle Creek was followed in less than 3 weeks by a major defeat. General John Ashe and his men had crossed the river and set up camp in what is now Screven County, where Briar Creek merges with the Savannah River. There he was surprised by British forces under Lieutenant Colonel Mark Prevost. The surprise was so complete that many of the Americans did not even have time to load their guns. Most of Ashe's troops, including Colonel Samuel Elbert, were captured. After this season of fighting, the British held Savannah, the upper coast, and the land up the Savannah River for many miles. The Patriots controlled a small section of the lower coast, Augusta, and the countryside north and west of Augusta. Georgia was part state and, as far as the British were concerned, part colony. George Washington realized how bad it was to lose Georgia, but he had no troops to spare. He believed French help would be needed to retake the portions the British controlled. The British reestablished a royal government in the territory they held, with Savannah as the capital. James Wright returned as governor, and many other royal officials took their old positions. The Patriots, however, were disorganized. They could not even get enough people together to hold an official assembly. An executive council had been set up in Augusta in January. It fled when Campbell came, only to return when he left. A group of Patriots from various counties met in July in Augusta. But since they had not been elected, they knew they could not exercise any real power. They did choose what they termed a Supreme Executive Council of 9 men who they hoped could be approved when it was possible to have an assembly. John Wyrett of Savannah was chosen as its president. Basically, the only areas over which they were really operating were the northern counties. The Siege of Savannah. In September 1779, Georgia Patriots received some surprise help. The French naval commander, Count D'Estaing, arrived off the coast with 22 ships and 4,000 troops to recapture Savannah from the British. The Patriots did not know that he was coming, so Continental Commander Benjamin Lincoln began a rapid march from Charleston and spent 2 days ferrying his troops across the Savannah River. In Savannah, Governor Wright and General Prevost quickly began to build defenses and asked for reinforcements from British troops at Beaufort, South Carolina. When D'Estaing demanded the surrender of Savannah on September 16th, General Prevost asked for 24 hours to consider it. During that time, the British reinforcements arrived. With these additional men, Prevost decided to defend the city rather than surrender. The French began bombarding Savannah in early October. They hoped that a siege would force Prevost to surrender without having to fight a battle. A siege occurs when military forces try to capture a fort or town by surrounding it and preventing any supplies from reaching it. The bombardment went on for 3 weeks, terrorizing the citizens in Savannah, including its many women and children. Meanwhile, the British strengthened the town's defensive structures. When the British had not surrendered by October 9th, D'Estaing, who had not planned to stay in Georgia this long, decided to attack. Even though the British were outnumbered 2-1, their defenses held. The French and many Americans fought bravely, but hundreds of Frenchmen and Americans died in the unsuccessful assault. Two famous Patriot soldiers who lost their lives in the attack were Sergeant William Jasper, a South Carolina Patriot hero, and Count Casimir Pulaski, a Polish citizen who had joined the American cause. The French retreated to their ships on October 18th and within 2 days sailed away. General Lincoln and his American troops retreated back to South Carolina. Savannah remained under British control. In Savannah, the British and Loyalists celebrated their victory with a day of thanksgiving and prayer on October 29th. British Commander-in-Chief Sir Henry Clinton turned his attention to the capture of Charleston. At the end of December 1779, Clinton set up a base on Tybee Island and prepared his troops for the upcoming invasion of South Carolina. On May 12, 1780, Charleston fell to Clinton's forces as American General Benjamin Lincoln was forced to surrender over 5,000 men, the worst American defeat of the war. The South's two major ports were in British hands. The War in the Backcountry. The British then attempted to capture the backcountry of both South Carolina and Georgia. British troops were sent to the major outpost in both states. Clinton returned to New York, leaving British General Lord Cornwallis in command. The King's Ranger, Thomas Brown, got the assignment to capture Augusta, which he was able to do without opposition. The Georgia Patriot government fled to Hurd's Fort in Wilkes County until forced to abandon it as Loyalist troops arrived in the backcountry. For months, the location of Georgia's government, if one existed, remained a mystery. But although the Patriots were disorganized, they had not given up. Many left Georgia for the Carolinas, while others built forts around their houses and tried to protect themselves from Loyalists and Indians. The Civil War turned deadly as bands of Loyalist and Patriot militia roamed the backcountry. Homes were raided, families were sometimes murdered, and crops were burned. One of the legends of the backcountry fighting involved a woman named Nancy Hart, who lived in what is now Elbert County near the Broad River. From historical research, we know that Nancy Hart was a real woman, born either in Pennsylvania or North Carolina as Nancy Morgan. She and her husband, Benjamin Hart from North Carolina, were two of the settlers who moved into Georgia's backcountry near the end of the royal period. In the 1790s, they moved to coastal Georgia. After she was widowed, she moved to Athens, Georgia, and then to Kentucky, where she died in the early 1800s. The first printed stories of any Nancy Hart activities in the Revolution did not appear until the 1820s. The stories were popularized by a writer named Elizabeth Ellet, who wrote The Women of the American Revolution in 1848. Later, other Georgia writers, including Joel Candler Harris, who wrote the Uncle Remus stories he had heard from African Americans, also told of Nancy's exploits. What began as stories began to appear as fact. Historian John Thomas Scott has traced 7 stories about Nancy that eventually appeared in print. 2 involve Nancy gathering information for the Patriots on the activities of Loyalists in the area. In one of those stories, she went to Augusta disguised as a man when the British were occupying the town. A 3rd story involved Nancy capturing a Loyalist on the road. Another centered on Nancy defending a fort, and another catching a Loyalist peering into her house through a crack. 1 story had Nancy helping a fleeing Patriot escape Loyalist pursuers. The most famous Nancy Hart story was about her capture of several Loyalists, in some versions the Loyalist who had killed Patriot John Dooley at his home. These Loyalists came to the Hart cabin demanding food while Nancy's husband was away. She and her daughter, Suki, cooked while the Loyalists relaxed and enjoyed themselves. 2 times she sent her daughter out, supposedly to get water. Actually, Suki was to blow on a shell to warn her father or other nearby Patriots that they needed to come to the cabin. While the Loyalists ate, Nancy slowly began to remove their guns. When one of them noticed what she was doing, they jumped to their feet. She pointed the gun at them and took them prisoner, actually killing 1 and then another. She held them at gunpoint until her husband and other Patriots arrived. They were then taken out and hanged. In 1912, railroad workers found 6 graves near where the Hart cabin had been. Some people thought that these may have been the graves of the Loyalist of Hart legend. The stories of Nancy Hart's deeds as a patriot in the American Revolution have become part of Georgia legend. As historian E. Merton Coulter said, there will always be a Nancy Hart tradition. The Battles for Augusta. Over the summer of 1780, the Patriots made plans to recapture Augusta. In September 1780, they gathered on a hill outside the city. The plan was to attack from more than one direction. 1 group came in from the west. When Thomas Brown and his troops came out to meet that threat, another group came through the town from the east, cutting off Brown's escape route back into the city. Brown and his men were forced to take refuge at the house of Indian trader Robert McKay, about a mile from the town. For 3 days, the Patriots kept Brown and his men pinned down in the house, shooting anyone who came out. Inside, the men ran out of water and had only raw pumpkins left for food. Just when it appeared that a Patriot victory was at hand, Loyalist reinforcements arrived on the South Carolina side of the Savannah River. The Patriots retreated, pursued by the Loyalists. Some of the captured Patriots were turned over to the Indians. Thomas Brown, following General Cornwallis's orders, hanged 13. This first Battle of Augusta was a British victory. Brown began immediately to build stronger defenses, including a new fort where the old Fort Augusta had been. He named it Fort Cornwallis. After the American loss at Camden, South Carolina, General George Washington had appointed one of his best generals, Nathaniel Greene, as commander for the Southern Continental Forces. Greene was determined to retake the South using the Continental and State Militia troops. His first targets were the backcountry outpost. To retake Augusta, Greene chose Lieutenant Colonel Henry Lee of Virginia, known by his troops as Light Horse Harry. Lee later had a son destined for military fame, Robert E. Lee. Henry Lee coordinated his attacks with General Andrew Pickens of the South Carolina troops and Colonel Elijah Clark of Georgia. The Continentals first took George Galliffin's old outpost at Silver Bluff, where the British had supplies that the Americans needed. As Elijah Clark and his militia marched toward Augusta from the west, the Continentals crossed the river to Augusta. After taking the fortified house of Loyalist James Grierson, the Patriots laid siege to Fort Cornwallis. After several days, Brown surrendered on June 5, 1781. Augusta was once again under Patriot control, and the Patriot government returned. The end of the war in Georgia. From the summer of 1780 through the summer of 1781, British General Cornwallis had been fighting in the Carolinas. He had victories at Camden, South Carolina, and Guilford Courthouse, North Carolina. He also surrendered losses such as that at Kings Mountain, South Carolina. Fighting in the backcountry was difficult for British troops. In the summer of 1781, Cornwallis marched his army to Virginia, where he camped on the Yorktown Peninsula. The French fleet soon arrived off the Virginia coast, blocking any British reinforcements or rescue from the sea. General George Washington and French commander Comte de Rochambeau had marched quickly down from Pennsylvania and come up behind Cornwallis. He was trapped at Yorktown and forced to surrender his entire army in October 1781. When news of Cornwallis's defeat reached Great Britain, the government decided that continued fighting was not in its best interest, even though they still controlled many areas in America, including Savannah. Even after the British surrender at Yorktown, Georgia's fate was unknown. Loyalists and patriots continued to fight each other. In January 1782, Brigadier General Anthony Wayne came to Georgia as the commander of the Continental Forces. Governor Wright pleaded for more British troops, believing that the British could keep Georgia in the empire. The British commander in Charleston sent him about 500 men. General Wayne, however, was aggressive, and many loyalists defected to the Patriots, hoping to keep their land. Wayne carried out small strikes against the British and loyalists when he could. To his amazement and dismay, Governor Wright was notified in May 1782 that Georgia was to be evacuated. In June 1782, General Wayne allowed a young Georgia patriot, Colonel James Jackson, to take the formal surrender of Savannah. In July, British troops and government officials, along with hundreds of loyalists, many with their slaves, left in ships sent for them. Some went to East Florida, hoping to get land there and start over. The Georgia Patriot government relocated to Savannah and began the process of governing. For Georgia, the fighting was over. In gratitude for their victory, Georgia officials voted to give Generals Nathaniel Greene and Anthony Wayne plantations that had been taken from Loyalists. As the British, American, and French representatives worked in Paris for a treaty, Georgians began to rebuild their state, their towns, and their lives. Reviewing the section, 1. Why did Georgia's invasions of British Florida fail? 2. Why was the Battle of Kettle Creek important? 3. What was the outcome of the Siege of Savannah? Page 291, Georgia Portraits. Elizabeth L. Johnston, Georgia Loyalist. In 1836, when she was 72 years old, Elizabeth Johnston wrote her memoirs about her life in Georgia during the American Revolution. Titled Recollections of a Georgia Loyalist, they describe the difficulties of being in an area of fighting, the tragedy of losing one's homeland, and the difficulty of beginning life anew in an unfamiliar environment. Johnston was born a few miles outside of Savannah, and she spent her childhood in colonial and revolutionary Georgia. Her father, John Lightenstone, was the colony's scout boat pilot, paid by the royal government to take government officials where they needed to go by boat. Like other royal officials, Elizabeth's father was a loyalist from the beginning. When the Patriot government took over Savannah, he had to make a last-minute escape to avoid capture. He left with other loyalist government officials, leaving behind the women of his family. In 1778, then 14-year-old Elizabeth had to go before the Patriot authorities to prevent them from taking away her father's land, which would have left her homeless. After the British retook Savannah in December 1778, Elizabeth was reunited with her father for the first time in 2 years. Elizabeth endured the Patriot French siege of Savannah in a barn with other Loyalist women, including her future mother-in-law. She wrote that, afraid of defeat, every heart in our barn was aching, every eye in tears. 1 month after the British Loyalist victory, the young Elizabeth married a Loyalist officer, William Johnston. His father was a wealthy physician and merchant and a member of the Governor's Council. Finally, in July 1782, the family evacuated Savannah. They lived in several places, including Florida, Scotland, and Jamaica, before finding a permanent home in Nova Scotia. Page 292, Chapter Review. Chapter Summary. Section 1, Georgia in the Early Days of the Revolution. Georgia's forces in the Revolution consisted of the militia and the Continental troops. Colonel Lachlan McIntosh was in charge of the Georgia Continental troops. The first battle of the Revolution in Georgia took place in February 1776 and was called the Battle of the Rice Boats. When the royal governor fled, Georgia Patriots established a government under the rules and regulations of 1776. It consisted of the Provincial Congress, the Council of Safety, and a judicial branch. Archibald Bullock was the first president of the council. Georgians, including traitor George Galvin, tried to keep the Native Americans neutral. In the end, however, most Native Americans who fought sided with the British. In September 1776, Georgia's Continental troops made an unsuccessful invasion of British Florida. The Continentals made another unsuccessful attempt in 1777. Georgia wrote a permanent constitution in 1777. The constitution established a one-house legislature called the House of Assembly, which held most of the power. The assembly chose the governor and his council. The Constitution also ended the policy of a state-sponsored religion. The 1777 Constitution established a system of counties rather than parishes. Section 2, Georgia in the Latter Part of the Revolution. In March 1778, France became an ally of the United States in its War for Independence. Great Britain changed its strategy in 1778 and turned its attention to the South. The British expected to regain the southern colonies and acquire Loyalist and Native American support. In April 1778, Georgia began its third unsuccessful invasion of Florida. In December 1778, British troops captured Savannah. In January 1779, Augusta fell to the British for 2 weeks. The British occupied parts of Georgia until 1782. In February 1779, American forces defeated Loyalist forces at the Battle of Kettle Creek in Wilkes County. In September 1779, French forces arrived to try to retake Savannah from the British. The siege was unsuccessful, and American and French forces retreated. For much of the Revolutionary War, fighting in Georgia took the form of a civil war between bands of Loyalist and Patriot militia. Augusta was retaken by Patriot forces in June 1781. Although General Cornwallis surrendered at Yorktown in October 1781, Patriot forces did not regain control of Savannah until July 1782. Page 293 contains a chapter review of Chapter 12.